Hello, everyone, and welcome to a slightly belated episode of Bravo and the Brits, the podcast with a distinctly English take on all things reality TV. Now, we can be forgiven for the slight delay because we were waiting for the address from our Supreme Leader last night. Which I think had us all feeling some kind of way.
It certainly did. I actually just felt worse afterwards. I just thought, oh, what was the point? Didn't tell me anything, really.
I liked his little, he was hamming it up. I mean, he's a showman. That much is obvious. And he was doing sort of, he fist pumped for teachers at one point. He was sort of bashing on the table for dramatic emphasis.
Oh, he loves a good emphatic hand gesture, doesn't he?
I just love that our government, the logic of our government is to do a 10-minute address to the nation, basically laying out sort of a very, very vague kind of framework, which again, I actually thought was fairly clear in its like overall message, but then to release the day after 50 pages of clarifications. Yeah. I mean, if there's 50 pages where you're actually setting out the rules, is that clear?
Exactly. If you need 50 pages of clarification, then what you're trying to say is not concise and not to the point.
No, I just
and I also feel like something that requires 50 pages of clarification can't be delivered in like a 10-minute address.
No, and I'd have sat there for an hour if I'd have, you know, received the answers that I needed to.
Happily, we left the news on afterwards, sort of awaiting something else to happen. And then it was just like a series of different reporters basically re-explaining it. And it was like, oh, that was just it.
Yeah, that program that they did afterwards that was like BBC News special.
Yeah.
They were basically like, well, he's got to talk to Parliament tomorrow, so I guess we'll just wait until tomorrow.
Yeah, it was like an hour of that.
Good. And then what I did like was a lot of tweets comparing the COVID scale to the Nando's spice charts.
I love this. I was so into this.
But what is your go-to Nando's order? Because I don't know this about you.
Oh, I know. Oh, this is testing, right? So usually it is, I prefer the butterfly chicken because I don't like meat on a bone. I don't like having to eat food with my hands. So like if I ever like encounter a chicken wing, I'm one of these people that has to eat it with a knife and fork.
That's mental, but I love it.
And then obviously some halloumi cheese and those chips. It's like the most unhealthy collection of orders ever. But oh my God, I love it.
See, I do like that. I go for the butterfly chicken as well because, yeah, I'm not a massive fan of meat on the bone. Like I will eat chicken wings, but they're not my go-to.
Yeah, same. I don't understand people who are like, oh my God, I could eat like 1,000. I'm like, oh, I just get sticky and there's never enough meat and it's always just really unsatisfying at the end. Like I've had to work too hard for it.
Last time I was in a chicken wing place, I was very, very drunk. And I ordered a very spicy sauce, as I tend to. And then the waiter brought it to my date, not me. And then I had a go at him saying he was doing gendered sauce serving. I was joking, but then part of me was like, no, but really, you assumed that the man was getting the spicy sauce and that annoyed me. I was like, this is heteronormative. So I would tend to go for butterfly chicken. I go for a hot.
Oh, see, I have to go for a medium. The hot's just a little bit too much for me.
You see, I don't like the extra hot.
Oh, no, the extra hot is just heat without any actual flavour.
Yeah, it's just heat for the sake of heat. You just guess to say that you can get it.
Yeah.
And like then I tend to get the macho peas just to kind of balance things out a bit. I need to see some green to feel, to not hate myself. Sorry.
You know what I also do love as well is that red pepper dip thing with like the warm pita bread.
Oh, I've never had that.
Have you not? Oh my God, it's exceptional. I've tried so many times to make it myself and it's just never the same.
The worst thing as well is there is a new Nando's that's opened up 2 minutes away from my flat and it was open for about a week before lockdown started, so I never got a chance to go.
Oh, is that the one that's like next to Revolution?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God, yes. I would literally walk past it just before lockdown and I was like, I literally haven't had a Nando's in about 4 years, and now it's like, now that I've been like denied any option like of access to it, all I can think about is how much I want a McDonald's or want a Nando's.
Oh, I miss McDonald's breakfast.
Oh, I would literally do unspeakable things just for like some of their fries even.
Oh, yeah, just like limp, greasy fries.
Yeah, with like just that little bit too much salt on where you can't stop eating them.
Oh.
Literally love it.
And that's what I like to do, because I'm a full-on psychopath. I will dip my fries in my McFlurry.
Oh, no, you're one of these, Lou.
I love a sweet and savoury moment pushed to its boundaries.
See, I like to go really, really weird, and I like to get the little sachets of pepper that they do, and I put loads of salt and pepper on my chips and then eat them with like the tomato sauce, and it's so good.
I thought you were going to say you put pepper on your McFlurry.
No. Absolutely not.
Because pepper on vanilla ice cream, that's a thing.
Is it really? I've never had that before.
Try it. And also, I learned this in Texas because I've spent extended amounts of time in Texas for whatever reason. Vinegar, balsamic vinegar on vanilla ice cream will change your life.
Really? I always put like a balsamic glaze on like so much stuff. So that's an interesting one. I might have to try that.
Test it out. It's really good.
I mean, I'll not cover the whole thing just in case I find it like utterly repulsive, but like I'll probably do like a spoonful with a little bit, like a drop on.
No, test it, because honestly, especially if you like that kind of interesting flavor combinations. Yeah. The other thing that's kept me entertained this week is I have been speaking to my mum every day, and I chatted to her a few days ago, and she's also going through these phases where like some days she'll be really like depressed, and then some days she'll be like relatively okay and pretty happy. So when she was having a good day, she said that her and dad had worked out their porn star names.
Oh my God, tell me everything.
So the formula, because they had their friends that came over ages ago, and apparently they must have all been drinking wine and worked them out for whatever reason. And so they're using the formula of the name of your first pet and your mother's maiden name. Fantastic. So what would yours be?
You're going to laugh so hard. So mine would be Fat Cat Bolum. My parents had two cats that I named when I was young. I called them Fat Cat and Thin Cat. Ever the creative.
Fat Cat Bolum.
Fat Cat Bolum. It makes me sound like some kind of 50s jazz singer.
Yeah, like Chubby Checker. Yeah. Chubby Checker and Fat Cat Bolum. Oh, God. No, that's so good. I love that. So mine would be Gucci Creek.
Incredible. That is a porn star name right there.
It's pretty good. It's got like stripper undertones, but then mum and dad's really killed me. And I think it's because like between their parents' generation and their generation, like the names and stuff have obviously, I don't know, there's just something about it that's just so funny to me. So my mum's... Whiskey de Courtenay.
Wow.
Which I think is good. And Whiskey was my mum's cat when she lived at home, and she lived so long that I met her.
Oh my God.
She must have been about 25 when she died.
That is insane.
Met her as like a 2-3 year old, and this was my mum's like teenage cat.
That is incredible.
But then my dad, who is of German descent, this one killed me even more.
I'm ready. I'm so ready.
So his is Fluffer Frisker. Also, just the fact that obviously a fluffer is someone that exists on a porn set.
I love it with the German accent as well.
Fluffer Frisker. You can so see that being like the act at the Kit Kat Club in Berlin.
Yes. Oh my God, that is a truly exceptional set of names.
So your challenge, should you choose to accept it, is to find out your parents' porn star names for the next episode, please.
So I think I can figure them out. Oh, I don't know what my mum's would be. I know what my dad's would be, and it's hilarious. I mean, he's like one of a long line of like, what was his? Oh no, I forgot my grandma's maiden name now. She like her family has like French descent in it, so she had like a Penluna somewhere. I can't remember her last name, but my dad's dog was called Butch, so it'll be Butch something.
No, Butch something French. That would be really good. I like that.
I will find out, and next week I will fill us in on exactly what's going to be.
Then I asked my second cousin, and hers was Pussy Rolls. Which absolutely destroyed me. She worked out her husband's, which also just made me die. Jimmy Strange. That is such a good male porn star name.
Phenomenal porn star name.
So good.
Oh my god, I'm so excited for this. It's my project for the week now.
Yeah, so that is your that is your challenge. So shall we get into the app?
Let's get into it.
So good. I watched this twice, actually.
Did you?
I did, just because I whacked it on Saturday and I started making notes, and then I was like eating my breakfast, having my coffee, and I thought, oh, do you know what? I'm just going to watch it once just myself, and then I'll go back and then I'll fill in my note taking.
Yeah, I feel like I need to start doing this as well, because I feel like I'm sort of so intent on like writing the notes that I'm missing little nuances and things like that. So I think I need to start like double watching it once just to sort of get into it and enjoy it, and then once to get all like the details down.
Yeah, and I don't find myself resenting it, even rewatching it, because it's just so good.
It was just such great TV.
We open up with Luann in florals for spring, of course. She's enjoying an al fresco dining moment, and we see Jacques.
Oh, return of Jacques. I'm so happy.
I think he is looking possibly better than he ever did.
I agree. Age has really suited him.
I saw people on Twitter saying that he had aged really badly and that
he
had really taken its toll. I was like, are you kidding?
Absolutely not.
I'm into it. I'm not even into French boys, just as a matter of they have too many feelings, but I like him.
Too emotionally available.
Yeah. They're just too intense.
Yeah.
And so Luann kind of says that they've kept checking in on each other throughout this whole time, after their breakup, that Jacques is engaged.
Oh, I know. My heart broke a little bit, because I was deep down, I was really hoping that this was going to be the start of like a Luann Jacques story arc again. But I mean, I'm happy for him. But
yeah, I did also think that, because I love, there's nothing more romantic to me than when people break up and like find each other again down the line.
I know. And like they're both in a better place in their life. And like it was clearly just meant to be. And like, oh, what a dream.
There's also some awful statistic somewhere. Well, it's quite a nice statistic, I guess, that says that it's something like 65% of people have met the person they're going to marry before they're 21.
Oh my god, that's terrifying.
But it might just be that, like, you know, it's not the right time or whatever, or you end up revisiting it. But I just think it's either lovely or stressful, depending on how you want to look at it.
I was going to say, I mean, looking back to the people that I was friendly with, like, around that time or before that time, I'm like, glad I'm not in that statistic.
So they seem to have this really lovely relationship, even post-breakup, which just made me deeply happy. And it makes me think that he's such a good guy, you know. And it also makes me actually think that Luann's character, in spite of everything, I think it's a really good sign if you can have like a healthy relationship with your exes.
I agree. And I know we were saying this about like Leah and her like partner last week as well. And it was so nice just to see such a healthy like relationship that's not based on romance and like had been in the past, but is now such like a pure friendship. And it was so nice to see. And the same, it made me think that Luann's probably not as self-absorbed in real life as she appears on the show, or maybe she is and she's just better about it with Jacques.
I also think that she's probably got a healthy enough ego that we see through all of the posturing, re-cabaret and everything, that she's not the jealous type, and that's probably why she can deal with the fact that he's got this fiance, that she knows the fiance, she's friendly with her, because she actually isn't kind of insecure in that way.
Yeah, and she's not got that like jealous thing where she thinks that, oh, like somebody has something that I don't have. Like, I can't imagine Luann ever being envious of something that other people have.
No, or she certainly wouldn't admit to it anyway.
You know, not even to herself.
The powers of denial are very strong in this one.
Absolutely.
So she's explaining how she's finding it difficult to not drink around the girls, but she says that she's not kind of committed to sobriety.
I know, and I kind of, obviously we see her and like Ramona and stuff talk about this like later on in the episode, and I sort of, I do get it, like I get that kind of like not wanting to make it as big of a thing because then it's possibly harder to fight, so I understand that side of things, but I also, it makes me a little bit nervous that she's just like, oh, I'm not committed to like sobriety as a concept rather than a having an occasional drink. It made it sound a little bit more like she's like, well, you know, I might just go back to drinking as I was.
Yeah, I think depending on how the other girls react as well, like we'll talk about it later on, but I think Dorinda's reaction was absolutely not what you want from that situation.
Oh, 100%.
In that she's like trying to downplay it, but to the point where she's actively encouraging it, whereas Ramona being like, no, honey, that's vodka, and kind of, you know, trying to like remove that item. Yeah, without kind of making a big song and dance about the fact that there's a drink on the table in the first place.
But yeah. Like,
oh, do you really want to do that, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's amazing when Ramona's the more tactful of a pair. Truly groundbreaking.
And Jack is like, you know, I'm not worried because I know how strong you are. We'll do what you need to do. You have one glass of wine with dinner, it's okay.
I love just like the boldness of it where he was just like, it's okay. As long as you have one, it's okay.
Yeah, it really, it made me miss home where like a glass of wine over a working lunch is not only accepted, but completely expected.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, it's Tuesday, it's midday. Like, yeah, crack the wine out.
Yeah, this is a completely normal thing.
And we learn at this stage that Jack has been dipping his toe in some stand-up comedy.
Which I find was such a wild curveball because although I think Jack has that kind of soft humour, he never struck me as like funny.
No, he didn't. But I actually thought he was very funny.
He did as well. I enjoyed it.
I was expecting a montage of cringe.
Yeah, but it was more just like the women, like that people weren't understanding it. But I didn't find it hard to understand him. And I have relatively zero experience of like listening to French people on a regular basis.
Yeah, I know. I thought they were just being deliberately obscure and ridiculous. It also reminded me, I watched a documentary a few months ago about one of the biggest French comedians moved to New York because he decided that he wanted to try and make it in stand-up, but like in an anglophone sense, so English speaking. And it was really interesting because he is literally like the biggest star in France. Then he moves to New York and like no one fucking knows who he is. And it was all about like how difficult that was. And I still don't think he's really managed to like break through into that new audience.
But it's so weird, isn't it? I guess it's that kind of like the sort of, probably in the same way that British humor doesn't translate as much with Americans. Like American has a much more sort of like in your face comedy style. Whereas I think like a European is a much more like subtle and understated one.
Oh my God, I remember showing my Belgian friends Monty Python. And they were just like, but I don't understand why they have coconut to make the horse sound. It's not, you should just get the horse. And it was just like, okay, this does not work.
Lost on you completely.
Yeah. It was so funny. And then obviously there's that bit where they go to the castle and there's the Frenchman who's like, your mother was a hamster and your father smelled of elderberries. And they were just like, I don't even know what this elderberry. Your mother cannot be an hamster, he's a human. God, yeah. I try that one.
It's just so weird, isn't it, how different comedy styles like just don't translate in different countries.
Yeah, and like you say, I think especially in America, like it's definitely a lot more brash.
Yeah, you need that kind of, they almost need it spelling out a little bit. Like this is one of Greg's main gripes. So Greg hates like sitcoms with like canned laughter and things like that, and he hates pretty much all American sitcoms because he's just got this real issue with the fact that they have to spell out jokes for people.
And I was like, I don't mind.
Yeah, and I was like, but I don't mind it. I was like, I think because like that is just what it is, and that's just the nature of that kind of sitcom. He's like, ugh, I just can't bear it. I can't bear having a joke explained to me.
I love that. That's so British.
I know.
The pretension of just being like, oh, they're cueing me for laughter.
Mm. Yeah, it's like, oh, if it's not funny on its own, then it's clearly not funny.
So they get served their food and it looked so good. And do you know what? It made me really miss being brought like sweet potato fries in little metal buckets.
Oh my God, I miss that so much too, with like a little side of mayonnaise. Oh.
Like some Cajun mayonnaise or something.
Oh my God, yes. I know, it's so funny. Every time I watch like one of these like episodes now, the thing that makes me so wistful for real life isn't like the people or the noise or something. It's literally sitting down in like a restaurant and being handed a drink and handed some food.
Yeah, just seeing it coming over, like the waiter making the approach and just like your taste buds starting to work over time.
God, I miss it so much.
To be honest, I've been missing any kind of appetizer and any kind of like ridiculous receptacle. Yes. I've been literally going through my camera roll and just sitting there stroking a picture of like calamari in a seashell.
When me and Greg went to Berlin for his birthday a couple of years ago, we found this cocktail bar and they served every cocktail in like a ridiculous receptacle. So I got this one that was literally in like a conch, and it was like the whole cocktail was just this like foam. So it was like drinking like weird bubbly air, but it was so fucking delicious. I was like, I only ever want drinks served to me in some kind of seashell now.
My drinks must be fully aerated and like foam.
It was amazing. I was literally just so happy. I was like, every drink now is just subpar.
There's nothing that turns me on more than going to a restaurant and seeing like a foam on a menu, you know, like a truffle foam or like a foam reduction. Oh my God.
I know. Oh, what I wouldn't give for like proper real food. I literally have reached the point now where on Saturday, you know, and the idea of cooking food is just too much, but I was also like, oh, I can't really spend like more money on takeaways. So I literally made like a child's meal of sweet potato fries and chicken dippers.
Oh, that sounds so good.
I was just like, it's where I'm at now. It's fine. I'm
heavy into that. So it transpires over the course of their conversation that Jacques has not yet heard Feeling Giovanni.
I wonder if that was a conscious choice.
He has made a concerted effort not to hear it.
Yes.
So she puts it on. Jacques is grooving out, but without having any idea who or what Giovanni is.
I love that sort of complete lack of awareness where he was just like, oh, what is this, Giovanni? Who is this? What are you feeling?
Look, I just want them to get married and be together. Like, why is life so unfair?
I know, it's literally all I want. And he did this like little seamless transition into Italian, and they both had a little like joke in Italian with each other, and I was like, you two are literally soulmates.
I know. Is his fiance American?
I can't tell. I don't think we heard her speak, did we?
No.
We should do some digging.
She looked very chic and Euro.
She did. I was thinking the same. I wonder if she's a fellow Frenchie.
I think she'd have to be as well to like put up with Luan still being fat. I feel like that's quite a French attitude.
Yeah, I think Americans like in general are much less kind of open to that sort of thing, whereas I think it's definitely a Euro thing to be like, oh well, they're in the past, so
yeah. Or they've probably had like some group situations.
Yeah,
that's also very Euro.
Yeah. But if you won't go away, we might as well do this instead.
So Dorinda then goes to visit her old townhouse and talk to the metal gate she installed several years ago.
I found this so wild, the fact that she was just sort of wailing in the street outside. Like, can you imagine the current tenants just like, what is this woman doing?
Yeah, I did think that. She seems to be going on a kind of depressing tour of her old haunts.
I know, and I'm not really sure what's prompted it. Like, I know she said it was while she was like renovating something, she thought she'd go around and look at the old places, but it's definitely deeper than that. Like, I can't imagine anybody ever renovates a house and thinks, I must go and look at all the places where people I've loved and lost have been.
No, it's not like the first logical thing you do, is it? Yeah. I think this is part of her unraveling.
Yeah. She seems to be sort of right on the precipice, doesn't she?
Yeah, and they end up going for a girls' lunch at the Italian she used to do date nights at with Richard. Yeah. The maitre d' says he misses Richard, which
I
was...
I know, I sort of felt for it in that sense. And it's like, oh, well, it must be really shitty if, like, there's places that you used to love to go and stuff, and you kind of feel like you can't go without that memory. But it also seems like she was inviting that memory. I don't know how much of it was for the cameras.
I think it's kind of nice that...
Yeah.
I don't know, I feel like maybe if the same thing happened to me, it would be nice to know that, like, other people around me remembered him, because otherwise you'd almost feel like your whole... relationship was like almost like a hallucination, you know, like, yeah, you get it in your head of like, does anyone else actually remember what he was like, or as those memories fade,
like it didn't have any sort of like real impact on the world around you, like your whole world's completely different and it's like there's no semblance of him in it anywhere, which I guess must be super weird.
It must be very isolating.
Definitely. So I guess it is nice to have
isolating is the word of the day.
Something we can all identify with now.
So Sonia is squeezing what looks like grenadine into her glass and just shaking profusely.
I love that Sonia just turned up with a fucking plastic bottle full of some inconspicuous liquid and not a fuck to give, just pouring it into a drink.
She explains that she's doing a liquid cleanse diet for 5 days where she only has soup, smoothies and drinks with perhaps the occasional olive.
I mean, it's just, it's everything I hate about this kind of, like, lifestyle is the kind of, the juice cleanse. I just think, like, no, like, you've got enough money, hire a personal trainer and get a chef.
Like, have you ever done any kind of thing like that?
No, so I used to be, like, super into, like, tracking my food, and, like, I had, like, an app, and it was literally, like, to the point where I would, like, weigh a piece of bread, and then I would butter it and weigh it again to make sure I had, like, X amount of butter. It was like insane, and it was like, it was never like eating disordery, but you know, you just get like so like heavy obsessed with something. I wouldn't be wake up planning what I was going to eat, and I just thought, I just don't care enough about this anymore, and then just went the other way and just started eating everything.
I've never like flirted with diets in any way, just because I think they're counterproductive as well. Like, I can't imagine any situation where depriving myself of something that I want in the long run is going to be better for me.
Exactly. And I think that was the thing. It was like, I'd had like 3 slipped discs in my back, and I'd had like spinal surgery and stuff because I couldn't really walk very well and that kind of thing. And I'd put on like loads and loads of weight, and I still had like a really weak back even after I'd had like corrective surgery. So I'd started seeing a personal trainer who I actually loved, and she helped me like get a nutrition plan together and stuff. But I just got so obsessive with it, where I was like, as soon as I started losing weight, it was like the first in my life where I'd been like thin. So it became this like, oh my god, like it's finally happened, and like it was so hard to like let go of it.
Yeah.
And then it was the same thing where I was like, we went on holiday, and I was so like frantic beforehand about what to eat. I just thought, this is fucking ridiculous. So obviously like I indulged loads on holiday, and I got back and I just thought, I feel so much better for having just enjoyed myself around food. So from then on, I was literally just swore blind. I was like, deleted all the apps. I was like, I never want to look at what calories are in things again, or how much stuff is in things. Like, I don't even like looking at the calories burned on like machines at the gym and that sort of thing. So I'm just like, it is just an obsessive mindset of like, I'm not good enough all the time, and it's just, oh, it's tedious.
Yeah, I think it's a slippery slope, and I think I count myself very lucky because I've never really had kind of issues with my weight, but my mum is very skinny, and she's never deprived herself of eating, but I think just genetically she's always been on the smaller side. I mean, she's still like a size, well, she was a size 12 most of my life, and then now she's a size 8 because she's developed an allergy to alcohol. Trust me, I think she would be a size 12 that could drink any day over a size 8. So I got myself very lucky in that, and if anything, I've more had the problem of like being too skinny at times and really kind of having to make a concerted effort to not go too much in the other direction and actually eat more. But I think there can't be anything harder to deal with than like disordered behavior around food, because it is truly the one thing that you cannot avoid. I mean, even alcohol, worst case, you don't go to clubs, you don't go to bars, you get someone else to do your shopping for you, you know, you can kind of control your access to it.
Yeah.
forget it, you have to face it 3 times a day.
Exactly. There's like no two ways around it. And it's like, I mean, still to this day, like I find myself like mentally, like I'll get into bed and I'll start to like mentally calculate like the approximate amount of calories I have. And I have to like physically stop myself from doing it because I'm like, it doesn't matter. And like, I always have this thing of like, it's really like, it's so unhealthy, but it's like, I look at pictures of when I was much thinner and then I kind of feel like judgment of myself. But then when I sort of look at it in a completely alien perspective, I'm like, I don't dislike the way I look. Like, am I as thin as I used to be? Absolutely not. But I'm also not unhappy with how I look. I just keep feeling unhappy because I'm trying to cram myself into like jeans that fit me 3 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, I think so much of it is like self-inflicted.
100%. It really is. And it all comes, I think, from a place of like a lack of control, like in other areas, because it's like I had quite a like abusive relationship before that. And I think it was one of those things where I was like, I'm in control of something. And I just went way too far the other way.
Yeah, I can completely see how that situation, because that would be the area in your life where you were like, well, that person can't touch that. Like, yeah, this is me having ownership over myself in one small sense.
Exactly. But it's like, it's so much nicer now. It's like, I can literally before I came up here, I was like, oh my God, I'm starving, but I don't have time to like make breakfast. I was just like, I'm just gonna have a couple of squares of chocolate. And before, I'd have literally been like, oh my God, that's it. I can't eat anything else for the rest of the day. And now I'm just like, oh, I think I'm gonna make some Eggs Benedict when I'm finished this and have some proper brunch.
Yeah, it's, I think food is such a like wonderful thing. And I do really think it must be awful to have like enduring problems with it.
I do as well.
So I say, I can see how, as someone who's never really had to consider that,
yeah,
how it's easy for me to say.
I know, but I think it is one of those things as well. I think it all just, it's almost like it's awful, but I think sometimes people have to sort of like flirt with the edge of that before they kind of go, actually, this is a really unhealthy way. And it's just, it's such a shame when people can't see that it's unhealthy, which I think is where so many problems come from.
Yeah, and I think all of these celebrities flogging those teas that make you shit yourself.
That's why I literally love Jameela Jamil so much. Like when he like calls out like the Kardashians and stuff on like their bullshit of like those like waist trainers and things, and it's like all they do is crush your organs together. Like
it's when you actually put it like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy. Like, I get my Botox in my jaw for my tooth grinding, but like when I think about the fact that I basically pay a lot of money to get poison injected into my face, it's fucking mental to like paralyze my facial tissue. Like, what the fuck am I thinking? And it doesn't even change the way I look. I mean, it's literally, you know, for my teeth.
Yes, yeah, like
I'm gonna get Botox for my wrinkles when I need it because it's fucking great.
No, and I keep thinking like, oh, like it's like for my wedding, because I've always had like very, very thin lips but quite like a strong jaw and nose, and my lips are really crooked. So I was like, well, I might just sort of get like a little, like, I don't want like big like Instagram lips, but I'm just like, oh, I'm so conscious of them being so crooked every time I smile. And I know exactly what I'll do. It's every photo where I look dead happy at the wedding, I'll be like, oh, but look how weird and wonky my lips are.
Okay, I've got a recommendation for, you need to go to my Botox guy. He's so good.
Fantastic. You can send me the rec after.
I will. Anyway, we digress. Yes,
we do.
So they're at the Italian restaurant. Dorinda orders the beef carpaccio. And honestly, I felt exactly like Sonia in that moment, just being deprived of that sensory experience. There is nothing I love more than a beef carpaccio. Oh, my God.
So full confession, I've never actually had one.
Do you like steak tartare?
I've also never had that.
Oh, my God. Okay. Are you offended by the idea of raw meat?
Yes and no. I think if I don't think too hard about it.
Okay, I mean, do you eat sushi?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think you would like this.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited to try it.
You'd have to get it at, like, a really nice restaurant. But
yeah, I was going to say, I think that's the thing with stuff like that, is, like, you never want to have, like, a subpar thing. It's, like, I've always really wanted to try, like, escargot, but I think...
love snails so much.
This is my thing, so I'm like, it feels like something I'd probably quite enjoy, but I also don't want to try them for the first time in like a subpar kind of situation, because okay. My grandma got some for my parents to try once, and like, she obviously, like, my grandma's like, God love her, the worst cook in the world, like truly truly awful. And my dad was just like, I couldn't, like, they literally just looked like snails that she'd found in the garden, and like, they weren't, but you know, and you're just like, yeah, that's not the environment I want to try this in.
Yeah, I totally get that. I think you should come to Brussels when everything like calms down again. we can go stay at my house. And then this is another kind of mad thing. So you know how after a British night out, you have like a kebab?
Yeah.
We have like the snail van.
Stop it.
You can go and get like fresh garlic escargot.
You're making this
like
up.
A little hot. They're so good.
Oh God, please, can we do this? It sounds phenomenal.
So possibly like there is a stage after you've drank a certain amount that like you're not gonna fuck with that.
Yeah, I was gonna say it sounds like it could go one way or the other. You have to be just the right amount of drunk for that.
So Sonia's having a full meltdown looking at everyone's mains arriving. And did you notice she had those offensive earrings on again? The ones that look so cheap.
Did. What is she doing with them? Are they part of her line? Is she thinking that if she just wears them in enough scenes, people will want to buy them?
Branching out into jewellery.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Stepping on Ramona's toes.
Yeah.
So it transpires that Leah and Dorinda spoke about Tinsley at Sonia's fashion show.
I know, and I think it's nice the way that Leah's just like a little bit protective of Tinsley and is just like, well, I feel like she opens up to me fine, so maybe it's you.
Yeah, Dorinda has obviously acknowledged that Leah's been able to get through to Tinsley on some level that she hasn't.
Yeah, and I was kind of quite surprised that she could kind of admit that maybe it was something to do with the way that her and Tinsley communicate rather than just making it Tinsley's fault. And I think she can't really argue with the fact that obviously somebody like Leah, who's obviously been able to just come at her in a much more respectful and like neutral way, has been able to actually get to know her.
Yeah, it's because Leah doesn't have that aggressive demeanor as her initial approach.
Yeah, I think Dorinda also struggles with this thing where it's like Dorinda feels like she's entitled to know somebody. Like she's entitled to know everything about them and this kind of thing, which kind of turns a lot of people off. Like I hate it when people think that they're just like, you should tell them everything because they've asked a question about it. Whereas I suspect that if Leah asked Tinsley something and Tinsley was a bit like, oh, I don't really want to talk about that, Leah would just be like, that's fine, like I'm not bothered, and move on from it. Whereas with Dorinda and some of the women, it becomes this thing where it's like suddenly it's a button to press and it's something that she's like specifically targeting them to like block them out of.
Yeah, like equating the quality of your friendship to the access that you have to all areas of someone's life.
Yeah, exactly. And it's madness, really, because it's like, obviously, like, I have like various groups of friends and like they all sort of know different parts of me, and like some more like know more than others, and others are much more surface and stuff. And it's like, doesn't mean I like them any less or any differently. There's just certain things that you feel more comfortable sharing with different people.
Yeah, like some friends you would talk to a lot about your love life, or then others, you know, they're more like you have like party friends, you know, that you just want to have a good time with, and maybe you don't want to bring it to that like heavy place of conversation because you're like, no, they're my fun people.
Yeah, they're the people that I go to when I'm like, I've had a bit of a shit day, but I don't want to talk about it. I just want to be a bit silly and have a laugh kind of thing.
Yeah, and then you have some that do both, and then those are probably like your best friends.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Dorinda just really struggles with the idea that maybe somebody just doesn't want her to know some things about their life.
Yeah. So all the girls are going to Luann's comedy show, and Ramona explains to Elise that Luann is kind of taking her sobriety day by day.
Yeah, so it's this kind of conversation that I sort of was like mentioning before. It's like I actually think like Ramona's explanation of it does make a lot of sense, where she feels like she commits to, you know, saying I'm never drinking again, then suddenly it becomes like a big elephant in the room that makes it so much harder. So I do sort of understand that mentality of being like, well, I'm not going to say never, but not for right now, because it makes it easier to manage.
I think the way that Ramona explained it was quite fair and quite considerate, you know, just saying, well, look, you know, this is her philosophy, and I think she's just going to see how things go. And
I do as well, because I think at least like possibly like unintentionally, but it was kind of asking it in a sort of way of like, well, do you think she's going to drink sort of a way, in this kind of like really negative mindset about the drinking, if that makes sense. Whereas I think Ramona's a much more like weirdly much more even and level fed like headed approach to it.
Yeah, Elise seems to be making more kind of pointed comments.
Yeah.
Do you know who she reminds me of ever so slightly?
Who?
Carlton from Beverly Hills.
Oh yes, I can see that.
I don't know if it's just because she's got that like silky goth girl black hair in a sea of blonde.
But no, I can so see that. There's something about her very sort of like calm but direct way of speaking as well. It's very reminiscent of Carlton.
Yeah, she's very deadpan.
Yeah, she's kind of not got a whole range of emotion.
So that wonderful, wonderful face poison. And then this made me laugh. Ramona says she was turned on by Dorinda's luscious breasts.
Which was just really a perfect cutaway.
Dorinda is mortified to the point where she just has to cover herself in a napkin. I think Dorinda in that moment was genuinely worried that Ramona was going to make an approach.
Yeah, like she'd had enough of trying to snag a nice single man in like Manhattan. It was just like, oh, maybe a woman's the way to go here.
If you didn't know that Ramona was so fully scandalized by the thought of actual lesbians. Which is ironic, given you know that her and Sonia have gotten it on at some point.
Oh, 100%. Even if they've just sort of made out a little bit, like there's definitely been something that's happened with them.
I'd make out with Sonia.
I would as well. She seems like such a good time.
Yeah, I feel like you'd definitely have fun, whatever happens. Yeah. You might get injured, but...
Yeah. Risk of injury is a real possibility.
May catch something, but...
Yeah. Oh god.
So Tinsley and Dale are at lunch in a venue that looks bustling but shockingly lo-fi for them.
Yeah, I thought the same. I also did love Dale's little blue leopard print moment.
Yeah, it was like Dynasty meets Never Fully Dressed.
Oh, that's a beautiful representation of it. It was so like classic, like somehow she'd managed to make leopard print look like the chicest uptown thing ever. Like, I fucking love a leopard print, but I'm always much more of a garish, like, throw it all in there kind of a leopard print. And she managed to make this look like it could have been Chanel.
I really liked that it provided a bit of contrast to her very classic little rounded gold earrings.
And the little string of pearls that she had around her neck.
Dale is so clearly uncomfortable with cafe culture. Dale has not ever been seated on a metal chair in a dining establishment ever before.
You could just sense her discomfort. And the fact that they ordered pizza was such a wild ball for me. I was not expecting that.
They ordered pizza, but at no point did they actually eat any of it.
So this was the other thing I was going to point out, was that it got so dark around them. So you knew they were filming that scene for a good few hours. And at not one point did there was there even like a sliver of pizza or a bit of crust pulled off.
But also, I was absolutely shocked at the glasses that they were served their wine in. They were served their wine in tumblers.
I know. Oh, you could tell Adele was going to go home and tell all the women on the board about this, wasn't she?
Oh, I'm sorry, but that is just the fastest way for your wine to get heated up prematurely. I hate it.
I know. It's so unacceptable. And I don't even drink wine, but even I know not to do that.
But Dale is having to come to town more and more, of course, and adapt to hipster farmer's market on a Sunday culture because she wants to spend more quality time with her grand dogs.
I love that they discussed it like it was a truly normal, rational thing. Like, Greg and I joke all the time about our dogs being, like, our children, and, like, Greg's mum's, like, super into, like, they've got, like, loads of... Greg's brothers have loads of kids. They've got loads of grandkids. And she was just like, oh... no grandchildren from us. And I was just like, you are literally looking at our children, Leslie. This is all you're going to get, I'm afraid. So I'm very into the dogs as children notion. But I also wouldn't expect my own mother to come from out of town to look at them.
Tinsley is not joking one bit.
There is not a shred of humour in this.
No, she is fully sincere. Bruce comes up in conversation and we learn that it is over.
As we predicted it would be.
As we all knew it would be. She said it was a mature ending in that nobody dislikes each other. It's just finished. So this translates to me as we never felt that strongly about each other in the first place.
Yeah, neither of us were really that bothered. So it kind of just fell apart rather than having a big emotional conversation.
Because I also think, like I say, I'm very much a believer in being friends with your ex, being on good terms. We are going to get Lewis on the pod at some point.
So excited.
We had a few months where we took a lot of distance from each other because it was difficult. You know, it doesn't mean that we disliked each other, but obviously we did have strong feelings for each other. You know, I never didn't like him as a person.
Yeah.
it is tough to walk away and it's tough to put an end to things. So we needed that cool down period. Yes. And I think if you can just end something from one day to the next and be like, meh, whatever, you know, that doesn't point to a strength of feeling, even when you were in the relationship.
Exactly. And it's like everybody needs that like transition period, regardless of why you've broken up. Like you say, like even if you break up on like good terms, everybody needs that sort of like transition period to breathe from and to kind of go, right, I need to sort of move on from this before I can see them again. So yeah, I agree. Like if you can literally break up with somebody and just kind of be like, meh, not bothered at all, then I think it's a pretty clear indication that you've made the right decision.
Yeah, it's the healthy way forward.
Yeah.
So she admits that she basically liked Bruce because she was dating him in the hopes that she would bump into Scott with him in Chicago.
Which, I mean, for like a 40-odd-year-old woman, you just want to be like, you're better than this.
I did admire her honesty.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been on Tinder dates just to prove the point that I was still going on Tinder dates, almost regardless of the person that they were with.
Fantastic.
I'm not saying it's the right thing to do, but...
No, but it's definitely the thing that I think everybody's done that at some point. Like everybody's kind of like gone on a date or made out with or even been in like a relationship for a couple of weeks with somebody purely to sort of prove a point, whether it's to themselves or to somebody else. And it does fall apart quickly, but it's like everybody's done it and you're lying if you say you haven't.
Exactly. And we've also all had extensive fantasies where we bump into our ex doing something obscenely glamorous, looking better than ever. Of course, it's always going to be that you bump into them when you're in like Boots Pharmacy getting cold sore cream.
I know. And you've always got that sort of like your hair's just like that wrong side of greasy where you can't pull it off as being like slicked back. And you've always got the worst outfit you could possibly imagine on. And it's always that day. Always.
Yeah, and it's like the one time that you've had a spot all month.
Yeah, it's gone into that like red crusty kind of realm.
Yeah, and it's always like in the center of your chin or like right on the side of your nose or middle of your forehead.
Yeah, well, there is no avoiding it or covering it.
Yeah, and you don't want to actually smother it in foundation because you know at that point if you do, you'll make it worse. So you're like, no, I'll let my skin breathe. And then that's when you're going to see your ex.
It's just like the laws of physics. There's no two ways around it.
That's like the rules of feminism. So Dale says that for Bruce, his life is set and he just doesn't need the added complication of a childless 44-year-old woman. And she's just kind of like beaming watching Tinsley getting wound up about it.
I know. She's such a button pusher, isn't she? She knows just how to deliver things in that sort of like completely calm, straight to the point manner where she can almost pull off being like, well, why are you so offended by that?
Yeah, because she's wearing pearls.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, I mean, I don't mean to hurt your feelings, but you know, I mean, it's true. It's not that you're complicated, just that he sees it as a complication, which is not better.
No, and it may well be true, but there is that element of like, if you're just saying something to someone for the sake of it, you know, just dress it up in a white lie.
Yeah. Tie a little ribbon around it and make it just a little bit nicer.
The last time I got upset about a boy, I phoned my mum and she was like, darling, he's intimidated by you because you're smarter than him, prettier than him, and you earn more than him. And I was like, cool, that's the narrative that I'm going to subscribe to. I don't care if it's not true, but that's what we're going with. I can't imagine ringing up my mother and her being like, well, you know, you are particularly difficult as a person.
Yeah. My mum's always good at coming up with a really feigned narrative for me as well, where it's just like, well, you know, you're so much stronger on your own and you accomplish so much more when you're by yourself anyway. So really, it's a good thing. And like, you'll find somebody that's much better and much better suited to you and much more of an equal. But if you turn around and just like, well, you are a bit of a pain in the arse, aren't you? So I can't really blame him. Mortified.
Mums are like true machines of propaganda. Like pro-daughter propaganda, that is where they just thrive.
100%. My mum could come up with an immediate campaign for everything that I've ever wanted to do.
Fact is not important. They're like alternative facts. And then once my mum was like, I think he's struggling with his sexuality. I was like, yeah, you're right, mother, he's gay. That's why he doesn't like.
My mom also delivered me that narrative with an ex-boyfriend as well. She's like, well, I always thought he was terribly camp, and maybe it's just gay faith, and he's just not ready to sort of talk about it. God love the mum.
That's what they're there for. And then your dad turns round and is like, well, I just think you're annoying and you're expensive. Cool. My dad is just so waiting for the day that I'm not like a financial burden on him and it just gets transferred to like another man.
Literally, after me and Greg like moved out and like, got engaged and stuff, my dad was just like, I'm so glad you're not my responsibility anymore.
My dad would sell me off.
Yeah. When we went on holiday to Egypt, my dad got offered like 3 Ferraris and 50 camels for me, and he genuinely considered it for like a hair of a second, and I was like, no.
Depends what colour the Ferraris are. Yeah. I like an obnoxious lime green or like an orange. I think red is too predictable.
I do as well. It's far too commonplace.
Yellow I could fuck with.
Yeah, I do love a yellow.
Says the girl who can't even drive.
It's all right, my car is like 19 years old and officially doesn't work anymore. It's been parked at my parents' since before lockdown.
Oh girl, you need to take that out on a trip.
I know, my dad drove it around the other day and he broke down in the middle of a roundabout and 2 men had to come and push him off the roundabout, and I was like, this is why I give it to you guys.
God. So Tinsley says that she's sick of the other ladies ganging up on her because she's also done lots of things. Not that she can name or reference a single one over the course of that conversation.
At no point does she say, I mean, I've done this and this and this and this. She's just like, but I've done so much stuff with my life. But never mentions it or goes into detail.
Yeah, she's not making a strong case for herself.
I also noticed that Dale had a sort of vaguely blank expression on her face while she was like going through this mantra, as if to be like, have you though?
Yeah, Dale's got this kind of strained smile. Yeah, so Tinsley is saying that she's not going to let herself be a doormat, particularly to Dorinda.
Yes.
Dale says she's worried that Tinsley would miss out on not having a child. I mean, Dale is literally offering herself up as a nanny to this woman. I just do it, Tinsley. Have a baby. Worry about the man after.
Exactly. I was going to say, and I mean, like, it sounds so awful and so kind of, like, dated, but, like, from what, like, the way that Dale was saying it as well, it's kind of true where it's, like, she is starting to run out of time of where it could sort of conceive naturally. So if I was her and it was something that I was that hell-bent on wanting in my life, I would just make the steps and just do it by myself. And like I say, like, she's not by herself. She's got Dale. And she can definitely hire an insane team of nannies and nurses and daycare and all of this stuff. So it's not like she's going to struggle. And no. I just think she should just do it for herself rather than doing it for a man.
Yeah, she could give that child so much time, so much attention. The fact that she's not really working.
Yeah.
But has the money anyway.
Exactly. Like, she's in that perfect position that I imagine, like, all new mothers dream of being, where they don't need to worry about finances and they don't need to worry about support and help and time and all that sort of stuff. Like, she's got it all to offer to this child that she's so hell-bent on wanting. So just do it.
Men are optional extras anyway.
Exactly. Men should be the accessory, not the outfit.
Oh, yes. Is that a Cher quote?
It is indeed.
Love.
One of my faves.
Sonia is going for a meeting with her CEO, Gaurav. There are papers being shuffled. She lost 5k in the first year. She broke even in the second year. Then she made another loss in 2017. Now, Gaurav looks as though he hasn't had a proper night's sleep in years. I mean, this is a broken man.
He looks like a man that is slowly losing his grasp on everything happening around him. I was going to say, I just love that it was also just like out of his house in New Jersey. There was no office. There was nothing. Like, she drove all the way to this man's house to have this important business meeting.
No, I mean, it was quite a nice house.
I mean, it was.
And I have to say, Sonia is also not looking her best in this. She looks pretty tired.
She does. She looks like ruffled. And Sonia very rarely looks like she's like frazzled. Sonia always just looks like that slightly hungover, had a really good time kind of a tired. But this looks like a genuine, like, she's just careworn by the world around her at this point.
Yeah, she looks world weary.
Yes, exactly. That's a perfect description.
It's getting a bit Dickensian up in here. So Gaurav confirms that they didn't see any wholesale orders after the fashion show.
We predicted this last week, didn't we? We said after that show, there is no way that there is like wholesale buyers snapping up that collection. Like, God love her, but it's not the market she should be aiming for.
I mean, can we just take a second to breathe in and breathe out and say that my tiny little business is officially making more money than Sonia Morgan's? No, it's really good. I needed this.
It genuinely crossed my mind when she was giving us all that information. And I was just like, I guarantee you Lou is doing far better than this on her own in her studio.
Literally selling old clothes.
Yeah.
And not Sonia. Even new ones. Not even new ones.
And Sonia, for all the fucking money in the world and the Morgan last name, with access to a fashion show in New York, I'm not going to say fashion week, but a fashion show in New York, cannot.
A fringe event.
A fringe event.
I just hope that it comes good for Gaurav, because he seems like a cool guy. He seems like someone who probably does know what he's doing, but like, I don't think he can actually afford to lose that much money.
No.
So Sonia's like, yeah, he can weather the storm. But I was like, oh, I don't know.
He looks like a man very much about to be consumed by the storm.
He's been battered by the storm the past 4 years. He now needs some kind of light breaking through in the form of a Marshall's order, maybe, or a JCPenney.
Well, we did find out that she's possibly going to be selling them at Century 21.
Yeah, which I can't actually remember. I thought this was like a homeware shop from my time in America.
I did as well. Like, I wasn't aware that it was like a, I'm not going to say designer, but like a sort of branded clothing kind of department store. Like, I assumed that Forever 21, God. Century 21 was like exclusively homeware.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And it seems strange. Like, a weird collection to make the exception for, if it is just homeware usually.
So they wrap up that meeting with little to no actual conclusion. And we go to Leah, who's FaceTiming Rob in bed. Oh, I love them so much and I need them to be together.
I know. I have such hopes that one day it'll be that romance that we were talking about before, where they'll realise that now they're in different places in their life, that they'll just make it work.
Yeah, because they're still not really dating people independently by the sounds of things. Rob is like, I'm not going out anymore.
Yeah, and she was just like, oh, like, I've got the time, like, I'm lonely and stuff, but like, oh, I just, like, there's nobody. And I was like, get together, do it. We all want to see it.
I have to say, though, Rob is like peak me refusing to feel my feelings when he's like, I'm not lonely, I'm busy.
Yeah.
I was like, same, girl. Reed, I'm so lonely and I'm also very busy.
Oh god, I really really wanted to be able to see more of Leah's apartment. Like, I'm so intrigued to see where she lives.
I think we will. I think that's coming.
Actually, I saw some kind of like not like a recap, but almost like a sort of like next week's episode kind of like thing online, and I think we get to see Luann go to Leah's apartment, and I think she's less than impressed by it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I want to see Leah like hosting an event at her place. That would
be amazing. I imagine it's very like supreme, like street art, like that kind of thing, and not at all like the rest of the women's apartments. That's all like gilded and pastel yellow.
I think it will be a cool, eclectic mix.
I do as well. I think it'll be a lot of art and a lot of fashion stuff. I think it'll be amazing. So I'm intrigued.
Leah's mum is still not speaking to her and supposedly won't be happy until she's on her knees and praying for forgiveness in church. God, I'm so glad I wasn't raised Catholic. Like, the level of shame that these people go through day to day seems really exhausting.
I know. I literally don't know how they do it. Like, I'm so, so grateful that my whole family is just, like, severely agnostic. There is not a religious affiliation in any generation of my family, and I'm so thankful for it.
My parents went through a phase when I was about... Okay, so I got convinced I wanted to be a Buddhist. Because, of course, we learned about it in school, and they framed it as, like, oh, it's not a religion, it's a philosophy, and it's about, like, loving animals, and, you know. And I was, like, I vibed with that. That made sense to me. So I decided I wanted to be a Buddhist, and then my dad was like, well, you have to sell all your Barbies then. And I was like, oh, okay, never mind. And then I remember a bit later on, because that was when I was, like, 6 or 7, and then when I was, like, 10, 12, my parents kind of sat me down, and I was like, oh my God, is this, like, the sex talk? Yeah. And then they were actually just like, if you want to explore religion, that's fine. Like, we're not religious. Smart people tend not to be. But they were like, if you want to go to the synagogue, we'll take you. If we want you to go to a church, you know. But, and I was like, okay. So I knew that that option was, like, open to me, but
I'm very into that level of support.
Like, the undertone was like, there's probably a reason that you're not going to be religious.
Yeah. I'm here for that level of support, though. Like, that's so good. But also, I love the sort of slightly shady. I mean, why not religious? And smart people tend not to be. But if you want to be, then...
I mean, my dad's a physicist, you know. Yeah. My mum, to be fair... Well, my mum's one of the smartest people I know, especially when it comes to, like, art and history and stuff. But my mum's actually now very into, like, occult stuff. So I don't know what happened. She's kind of gone to the other side, where now she's like, ah, yes, but it's all magic. But that's fine. She's into horoscopes and stuff. Like, that's just fun. Like, it's not organized, so I can deal with it, you know?
No, I'm saying, like, one of my like, my best friends, her mom's, like, super into, like, Reiki and, like, clearing your aura and things. And Heather was like, basically, it's fantastic. She goes, like, go. And my mom, like, cleanses my aura. And essentially, I just get, like, a head massage and, like, calming music for an hour, and it's great. And I was like, oh, that sounds incredible.
It literally sounds amazing.
So I was just like, I really want that. I don't know if I believe in it as, like, a philosophy or, like, a spiritual thing, but, like, the idea of just lying down while somebody, like, hums to me and, like, massages my head just sounds wonderful right now.
No, there's definitely something to it, in that it's just, like, time to slow down. Like, you slow your breathing down, and there's definitely, like, physiological stuff that happens as a result of it. Do I actually think you have an aura that's going to get, like, scrubbed clean? No. You know, but I certainly think it can be relaxing and stuff.
100%.
And then Leah eventually has to hang up because her neck is hurting from being in an awkward position, which felt very relatable.
I was just about to say, I feel like everything she does is so relatable. Like, there's no kind of, like, oh, I've got to go, I've got to run to, like, a hair appointment or a lunch or something. It's just like, my neck's hurting and I need to get up.
It's so good. We head over to Lou's event, which is a hybrid of live podcast recording, charity gala, but also stand-up comedy showcase.
There was so much happening here. So much happening.
And, you know, just to complicate things even further, it's being held at one of these venues, which is almost like a startup office, but just lit with more blue LEDs. So there's ping pong, there's a slide, there's probably a corner filled with beanbags somewhere.
Oh, you know there is.
And Ramona and Leah are heading to the event together, and this is a really fun duo that I would like to see more of. This scene itself wasn't, like, a fun moment for them, but I like them together as a dynamic.
I do as well. So it actually made me really happy to see them, because obviously it's always funny with Ramona. It can kind of go one or two ways, where she either gets really snippy and judgy of, like, the new person, or she kind of takes them under their wing. And I think with Leah being a little bit younger and also very willing to be open and upfront and things, I think Ramona is, like, really warm to her in a way that we haven't really seen her warm to many people,
especially not new girls.
Yeah. And, like, I actually thought this was such, like, a lovely, slightly, like, maternal moment from, like, Ramona that we don't really see all that often. Like, I feel like she wasn't even this kind of soft and maternal with her own daughter when she was in scenes.
Yeah, she's being very conscious of how she's talking to Leah. I find it very interesting
that she's having
this response.
I do as well. And I kind of like, I do actually agree with what Ramona was saying of like, you can't really do this stuff by text. You need to show up and that sort of thing. But I also wonder whether, because Leah is like, as of yet, like an unknown quantity where they've not really seen her blow up, but they have seen her really stand her ground, like with Dorinda and stuff. So I wonder if Ramona's like not really willing to like get in the ring with her, so to speak, because she doesn't really know how it'll go. So she just thinks it's better to be on the good side of her.
It could also be that.
Yeah.
Do you know what dynamic I think Ramona would be really good in? And I think just seeing them together made me think this. I think Ramona would be great as a business mentor to like a young female entrepreneur. And I just think that would be such a good concept for a show. Picking a business to invest in and like helping to grow it. I would watch the shit out of that.
I'd want to fuck out of that. I'd want to be on that show. I could come up with a business.
Pick me.
Yes. Choose me, please.
Ramona, she seems to be coming to this with a very mature and kind of nuanced perspective, which I didn't expect from her.
Yeah, I was not prepared for this type of Ramona, but I was actually super into it as well. It was really nice.
She suggests bringing floristry into her apology choreography as well, which made me laugh.
You can tell Ramona's gone through the motions of this like 100 times before. Yeah. It's like, pick their favorite flower, turn up with it, say a sort of semblance of an apology that's not really an apology, and then wait for them to do the talking after it.
She has a 3-step plan.
Yeah. And she can execute to like military precision at a moment's notice.
And then Ramona says that podcasts have gained major in popularity. But she just doesn't have time to watch. So good.
This whole thing was just like an exercise in Ramona trying to sound really like down with the kids and trendy, wasn't it? And it just didn't play out like that at all.
Not one bit. Dorinda rocks up and she's a nude Chanel.
Of course. Of course. I feel like this is back to a very like old school Dorinda look. I'm still enjoying her like little like talking head bit. I'm still enjoying this outfit with the floral jacket. And then we always keep flashing to her wearing some kind of beige or cream knitted tweedy number. And I'm like, oh, you can do better.
Yeah, I just don't like those colours on her.
I don't think they suit her hair or her skin tone or anything. Like, she does so much better in like punchy, bold colours.
Yeah, I think so too. I think they do wash her out a bit.
Yeah.
So Dorinda suggests grabbing lunch with Leah and Tinsley. Tinsley feels like Leah's got the right energy to kind of mediate a bit of a rapprochement between Tinsley and Dorinda.
So I actually was very into this idea. Like, I actually thought it was probably a really good idea. And I think, I don't know whether Leah or Dorinda came up with it. But I actually think, like, if I was Tinsley, I'd be thrilled at the idea of having somebody like Leah there, not to like speak for me, but just to kind of act as a bit of a buffer that's going to call Dorinda out without it getting messy. Although I do understand what she was saying about like sick of feeling like people are always speaking for her, so I do get that. But like, I think Leah would have been a perfect choice because she's actually on Tinsley's like team far more than she is on Dorinda's.
Yeah, I didn't really understand it because Tinsley says to them, she's kind of like, oh, that's a great idea. You know, she could let us have a moment if we needed to. But then it immediately cuts to a testimonial where she's like, I hate this idea.
Yeah.
To me, this was like the spirit of Sheena Shea is ever present.
You can never truly shake her.
So then cut to Jacques asking the ladies if they've ever bullied anyone. Oh, we get that iconic flashback to the scene on Brooklyn Bridge where Ramona just says to Bethany, well, at least I have friends. You don't even have friends. Who even are your friends? You have nobody in your life right now. You have Jason and you'll probably mess that up too.
Which was truly a turning point of Ramona's whole villainess storyline, wasn't it? It was like the point where she started to become this like, oh, I can just say things and get away with them with an apology later.
Can you imagine ever saying that to someone?
Literally not even my worst enemy.
It's so bizarre. And then we just have a montage of Dorinda being a sloppy drunk, essentially.
And screaming slurs and insults at people. And then both of them be like, no, I've never bullied anybody. And then Dorinda trying to, with conviction, relay the story of how she used to be the one that actually stood up to bullies in the playground. And then she was always the one that would get sent to like the head teacher because she was always the one fighting. And it was like, that's such a fucking crock of shit. You are fooling.
Everyone loves to see themselves as that, don't they?
Like, she obviously thought of herself as this, like, vindicator and, like, protector of the weak and stuff. And it's like, let's face it, you were definitely in that office, but only because you were instigating it. You fooled nobody with this story.
Leah says she can get over Sonia's pyjamas being sent.
I think they're just such a perfect pair, aren't they? Because it's what we've always loved about Sonia, is that nothing ever sticks with her. Like, she's just immediately over anything. She doesn't care to keep stuff going. And Leah's so the same. So I actually love this.
Yeah, I think they're both inherently, they've got very silly, lighthearted personalities.
Yeah, and it just gels so well. So I'm just really into this.
And then Dorinda is kind of doing this weird thing with Luann where she's prodding her into drinking and she keeps going, you're not an alcoholic, but she's getting almost aggressive. She's like fully shouting at her.
Yeah, she's like screaming about how it doesn't matter and like the more people build it up, the worse it gets, but like while screaming in Lou's face about it.
I think it's obviously a nice sentiment to like reassure someone, but the thing is, it's so blatantly done to help her cover up her own issues.
Yeah, that's all I could think about the whole way through it. And like when Luann took that drink, and obviously like when we'd seen this happening in like flash forward things of like things to come, it seemed like she'd done it in this really defiant like way of like things were going really wrong around her. So I was quite surprised that this was the actual circumstances around it.
Yeah, when she takes that sip of vodka before going on stage, Dorinda raises her glass and cheerses her.
Yeah, and then she's just like, well, it's done now, that's it, it's over, it's done. Like, doesn't have to be a big thing. And it's like, but you're making it into a big thing. Like, if Luana just had a sip, like, I feel like if it had just been her and Ramona even possibly would have been a bit like, well, how do you feel? Like, does it make you feel like you wanted more or like this, that and the other? But Dorinda's just like, yeah, that's fine, you can drink now, you can drink and it's fine. It was very weird.
Ramona looks suitably horrified. I thought it was uncomfortable to watch with Ramona kicking off.
I did as well.
And then Dorinda starts getting kind of aggro with Elise about it.
Yeah, like, because, and again, I like, I understand that Elise doesn't, to the best of my knowledge, know Luann that well. And like, it might seem a little bit like judgmental from her end, but I don't understand why Dorinda's like picking a fight with her over it.
Yeah. Well, again, it's because she wants to be absolved from her own guilt for her own behaviour.
That is so true. And it just gets more and more transparent. I think the more of a big deal she makes about this kind of stuff, it becomes more obvious.
Yeah, the more Luann is held accountable for her behaviour, then the more, by extension, Dorinda is not going to get excluded from that.
Yeah, exactly.
So then the showcase or the event or whatever you want to call it begins, and Luann is co-hosting the pod. I actually thought she was pretty funny. I mean, I like a lowbrow blowjob joke.
I do as well. And it was kind of even better coming from Luann because you just sort of don't expect it from her.
Yeah, because she's the Countess and yeah. She's supposedly prim and proper, but we know that that is the biggest farce of them all. And then Jack comes on stage and makes a joke about the pirate not being able to raise his flag, which again, I thought was funny. I really loved Jack's stand-up. I thought his delivery was on point. I thought it was funny. I thought it was, I don't want to say poignant, but it was topical, you know?
Yeah, and like his little like jackass kind of thing was like, it was so funny and it was such a good bit. And I don't know why nobody thought it was like humorous. Like I thought it was great.
The fact that these Americans can't understand him is insane. I mean, these women live in New York. Have they never come across Europeans before? And then I thought, oh my God, imagine transplanting them to Newcastle. How would they cope with Geordie?
Oh my God, I would love nothing more than to see these women, even just like a day trip here. It would be wild.
Can you do like a strong Geordie accent?
Oh, not well. I sort of exist in this bizarre realm where, depending on my surroundings, I can go posher or like a slightly more northern accent. But my friend who lives in Atlanta loves doing it, like a really, really strong one. Like she had exactly the same like private school upbringing as me and stuff. And, like she has the same very neutral kind of voice that I do. But she literally, whenever she's in Atlanta, she like turns it on just to like piss off the Americans.
Because I mean, I still have times up here where I'll go into a shop or remember going into a shop.
Yeah.
Where I will literally be talking to someone and I can't understand it and I have to get some clarification. So
I'm not gonna lie, there is definitely times where people have been talking to me and like in that dead like broad accent and all of that, and it's like I'm literally like, I don't know what you're saying to me, help me. And I do that sort of awkward like nod and just kind of hope that it wasn't like a question.
Yeah, you just go haha.
Yeah.
I never thought I was into Geordie, but then I was like hooking up with a Geordie guy all of last summer, and at one point he was like, you are proper fucking gorgeous, like, and I was like, oh, hello.
I think I love you.
Yeah.
That was actually quite a good accent as well, though. I'm very impressed.
Thank you. Although my mum was like, yeah, you could marry a Geordie. He'd be lovely and he'd worship the ground that you walked on. But, like, he's never going to leave Newcastle, honey. And I was like, yeah, I know. Why do you think I'm not going to go there?
It's such a weird thing that, like, so many people from here just have no interest in leaving, which I find wild. Like, if somebody offered me a job in New York tomorrow, I'd literally, you wouldn't see me for dust.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice, but, you know, I've been here for 4 years and I'm kind of like, I literally know everyone in this town.
Yeah, it's, like, impossible. It's so small.
Yeah, that's why dating has to go international, to be honest.
Transatlantic.
Sonia cannot process the woman who has never had an orgasm.
I wrote down a note about this as well. That face that she pulled was sheer unadulterated, like, disbelief.
Yeah, she caught a glimpse of, like, a different terrestrial plane in that moment.
It was the perfect difference between like disbelief and just pity of this woman, like, who had never experienced it before.
Oh, then there's that girl that comes on and is like, I'm gonna bring a very different energy to this in her floral blouse. And it was just like, oh.
I mean, I'm not gonna tell by that point. I would have also been like, I'm just gonna go to the bar, and then I'd have done like the backyard boogie and just gone straight out the door and found somewhere else to go.
Sonia and Ramona are getting restless, so they go to the loo and decide to reemerge just as the act is wrapping up. And honestly, I think just kudos to Sonia for showing up to anything, having not eaten for 3 days. I mean, Jesus Christ.
I would literally have been horizontal in bed, sobbing.
And shaking uncontrollably.
I had one of my wisdom teeth removed last Christmas, and I couldn't eat anything solid for like 14 days. And it was truly, I've never been so miserable. I got to the third day of eating soup and I literally cried for the next week and a half.
Oh, God. Yeah, I got that done in school. I've blanked it out of my memory, I think.
Hideous. Truly, truly hideous. And what was worse is because it was like it had actually like impacted. So instead of growing up, it had grown sideways at the bottom. So it couldn't be just pulled. So I had to have like full dental surgery where they had to like cut it out and like pull it out of my face.
Oh,
genuinely, like, between the stitches and everything, I was just like, I've never been so unhappy in all my life.
Yeah, that's gutting. To be fair, I had a couple of Christmases where I was on very strong painkillers. I was on, like, basically opioids, and I couldn't drink, so that was fucking awful.
That's horrendous. I was the same when I had all my back stuff. I was on such strong, like, doses of things, and I had, like, one particular painkiller that every time I try to drink alcohol on it, it just brought my face out in this horrendous rash. And I've never been so miserable in all of existence, where I was just, I got to the point where I was just like, I'm not going outside anyway. I'm just going to deal with the face rash.
Having said that as well, those painkillers are so strong that you almost don't need the alcohol. So in a way it does negate it a bit. Like, you're floating on air anyway.
Yeah, you're having like the best time without them, so it doesn't really matter.
We get this amazing piece of lost footage from the boxing gym where the tough guy character actor is giving Tinsley a pep talk by the side of the ring. And he's like, do you want to be a legend or do you want to be a fairy tale? And I couldn't tell if she was sweating or if she was genuinely crying.
I know. And of course, the obvious answer to that question is that you want to be a legend. And of course, Tinsley responds, but I want to live in a fairy tale.
Oh my God, someone just lobotomized this girl already. She's halfway there.
To this guy who looks like Dolph Lundgren in like an incredible, like in the, like a Hulk costume, Hulk Hogan costume. It was wild. He had so much going on. Like, it looked like he had a wig on. And it was just, it was perfection.
I want a pep talk from this guy. I would pay for a pep talk on Cameo from this guy to like get me through lockdown.
Same, just the way he was like right over us, like, you don't want to be a legend.
I think he could talk some sense into me.
I agree. I think he would be a fantastic motivational speaker.
So Tinsley is desperately trying to convince the women that she just wants to be single for a bit.
Which nobody believes.
Nobody buys it. Dorinda at this point sneaks out to the metal slide. And then Luann goes down, and then Sonia comes out right after Luann, obviously legs akimbo.
Yeah, wide open, just as she's coming out of the entrance. It's glorious.
Leah says that Dorinda can be intimidating, and Dorinda refuses to take this on board.
And then she immediately twists it to, like, Leah says, you're intimidated by me, Tinsley. It's like, that's not what you said. And she's going, it's word for word. It's gospel. It's exactly what you said. It's like, no, it's not. If anything, Leah's saying that she finds you intimidating, not that Tinsley does.
To be honest, as soon as we find out that Dorinda is a couple of tequilas in,
oh yeah, just,
I think you know where this is about to go. Sorry, I've been watching way too much TikTok recently.
Incredible. Incredible.
But then the other little detail that really made me laugh in this scene was Ramona leaning over at one point and going, am I scary?
You could tell she was hoping beyond hope that the answer was yes. No other answer would have sufficed for her.
Tinsley seems very frustrated by everyone trying to insert themselves into the situation. And eventually Dorinda just kind of seems to reach a boiling point and just decides to like extricate herself and leave.
Which is actually a very rare Dorinda move, because Dorinda's usually the one that likes to like up the ante and start the shouting and the hand waving and the leaning over people. So I was quite surprised that she kind of just was like, I'm going to leave, and then sort of shuffled off in a cream cashmere.
Yeah.
But I do kind of, I sympathise with Tinsley, because it is shit when you feel like you've got an issue with somebody, then everybody starts like chiming in with it and it becomes like a thing amongst people.
I don't think they particularly were, do you? I think Leah's basically offering herself up as a mediator, which I think she'd be pretty good at. You know, I think she should go to the lunch.
I agree. If I was Tinsley, I'd have jumped at that chance. And I also think it is a really good idea. So I don't know why she's so against it, because like it's already been proven time and time again. And again, in this situation, every time her and Dorinda try to talk, it just ends up with them screaming at each other and leaving. So yeah, they do need a mediator or therapy, one of the two.
Yeah, because Dorinda is aggressive in her communication style, especially when she's been drinking, and Tinsley is highly emotional and highly sensitive. So explain to me how those two, you know, personalities or ways of acting are going to be able to work something out in any kind of normal circumstance.
Exactly. Even like alcohol aside, like even if that was like a romantic relationship or like a parental relationship, like those personalities don't gel in the sense that they have such different ways of like working things out. So they need somebody there that can be a neutral between the two of them, because they just exist at opposite ends of a scale.
Yeah, you need a translator.
Yeah.
To say, well, I think, you know, a better way of putting that would be XYZ, or I think what this person means is that.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of just like that way of diffusing a situation that they both clearly need. So I don't know why Tinsley's so resistant to it.
Yeah, it seems odd, but I don't really understand why Tinsley does a lot of the things that he does.
Just as an aside, I love that Ramona and Lou took their like tennis beef to the table tennis table.
Oh, I missed that.
They were just stood in a corner, just like, it was while this is all like kicking off and they both kind of extracted themselves from the situation, and they were just having like a little chilled game of ping pong with each other, which was odd to watch in itself, but it just made me laugh because obviously they'd had that little tennis moment a few weeks ago in the Hamptons. And now here they are, like you say, in like what's clearly like a startup workspace with a table tennis paddle.
No sexy trainers this time, though.
No, just them and the table.
You know that after this, Lou was on a high, though, and she was like out to go and get some men after.
Oh, 100%. It wouldn't surprise me if her and Ramona went like patrolling together.
Ramona will not rest until she finds a man.
Oh, absolutely not. And he has to be exactly the right kind of man. Just all right won't do.
So then we get to the preview for next week, and we learn that Dorinda and John are taking a break, or at least there's a news article that's come out suggesting this.
That she thinks Ramona is planted.
Seemingly they have actually broken up, and it appears to have lasted.
Oh, really? Oh, that's kind of, I feel like actually like quite sad.
Yeah, I think anyway.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that.
But I'm also so excited that next week yields us another trip away.
Yeah, so they're heading out of town to an orchard for a sort of, I guess it would be an autumnal themed retreat.
But I mean, we've already established in seasons past that these bitches do not do well in the countryside.
Yeah, I want to see them struggle in nature though.
Same, it brings me so much joy because it's so out of their element. And so it's like taking a bird out of the sky and just seeing what happens in like in water. When they can't swim. It's just the most bizarre thing.
My old Tinder bio. So I've gone through multiple different phases with my Tinder bios before I just deleted it out of sheer frustration. But for a while, it was just not the outdoorsy type. Because I was like, well, that pretty much gets across what you need to know about my personality.
Yeah. It does succinctly summarize it, though. I'd be into that bio.
Tinsley screaming in the cornrow is basically how I feel after 8 weeks of lockdown, just me trying to kind of break through and communicate with one of the seven fully formed personalities I now possess and have to keep happy at all times. Like, I have fully fragmented as a person. I was talking with Lewis the other day and I was like, Lewis, I can't cope with this. Like, I'm kind of losing my mind as an individual, and I've splintered into all of these different sides of myself. And he was like, oh right, okay, what are they? So number one is regular Lou, so just day to day, it's just me, that's fine. Then I'm number two, taxidermy groomer. So I've been like dusting all my dead animals, you know, talking to them, giving them names, cleaning like their little glass eyeballs with Q-tips and stuff. Three, Real Housewives historian and theorist. Obviously, thanks to this podcast.
Naturally.
Number four, amateur canned good chef. So just basically lobbing together whatever I find in my pantry and hoping for the best. Five, horny 13-year-old boy let loose on the internet. Because, you know, with a lack of human physical contact, you know, you got to do what you got to do. Six, sad girl listening to Lana. I mean, I was this before anyway. I was all these things before anyway, really. I just think now they're becoming, like, more marked.
Yeah.
And then number seven is just meme curator.
I'm so heavily into all of these different factions of your personality, though.
I'm so multifaceted, you know, I'm not like the other girls.
Truly the worst thing anybody could ever say.
Yeah, because it's always people that are so thoroughly like the other girls. But let's not pretend that men don't also say that all the time.
They love playing that
down. I'll always be up front with you, except for when it doesn't suit me and I'm too scared to actually talk about what I feel because I'm actually a big fucking mummy's boy idiot.
Never a truer word has been spoken.
Oh dear. So we have VPR to look forward to. What are we thinking VPR is going to bring us?
Oh, I'm not sure now. I feel like we've gone into such a positive direction with it, but I don't really know what else it can really yield. I think we've got another sort of maybe two episodes to go with it before we hit reunion.
It's wrapping up, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's ramping up to the final. And I saw on Instagram that they recorded the reunion, but like from home.
Oh, so they're doing a Zoom reunion.
Yeah, which I feel like I'm not going to be that interested in. I mean, I'll watch it for the sake of, you know, investing in it, but I don't think I'm going to be that into it.
Yeah, there's something about it where it's like you just want that tension of them all in the same place. My only thing that I'm thinking is because they're actually going to be separated, they might be a bit more kind of outlandish, which might actually drum up a bit more drama. I don't know.
That's a good perspective, actually. I hadn't really thought about that. So, yeah, that'll be interesting to see.
Basically, like keyboard warrior, just
Yeah.
am.
Hidden behind the screen. That is an interesting outlook, actually. Oh, maybe I'm more excited for it than I thought I was.
Yeah, I think it's going to be quite good. I mean, I'm not going to say that I'm upset that this season is ending, but I'm sad that like we don't quite know what's going to replace it at this
No.
point. We don't know when Potomac's going to come out.
I know, and I feel like there's so much like Bravo stuff where it's like I haven't watched it from the beginning enough to be invested. Like I remember like the first series of Summer House I watched and I was quite into it and I thought it only done one series. And then on my Hey You when the Real Housewives had finished, I was like, oh my God, there's like four seasons of it and I've not watched any of them. And now I just feel too out of the loop of things.
Maybe we should go back and watch Summer House because a lot of
Huh.
people said that this season has been really good.
Yeah, and I've heard like really good things about it and people saying like we shouldn't be sleeping on it. So maybe we should do that.
Okay, I'm up for that if you are.
I am too. We also have Beverly Hills, which is actually proving to be far better than I anticipated.
Yeah, Bev Hills is up the ante. I think the Denise Brandy thing was needed,
Absolutely.
but I hate Kyle trying to come for the queen.
Oh, I know. Who does she think she is?
I saw this headline that was like Kim Jong-il faked his own death to see who would try and rise to power in his position. And I was like, this is Vanderpump leaving Beverly Hills. That's exactly what's happening here. She's left it just to see who's going to try and go into the power vacuum so she can destroy them.
Oh God, and I think Kyle thinks of herself as being the new queen bee, and she's just not it. She is not it at all.
To me, she lacks any form of personality or charisma. I don't find her a compelling character. I don't find her multifaceted. And I don't even find that she brings enough kind of personal trauma or conflict. I even think Erica Jane opening up a bit more is more interesting because she's got this, slightly seedy past and she's got this son
Yeah.
previous relationship, and we're all curious about, what's the dynamic between her and Tom. So at least she has that. I'm not saying she necessarily shares it, but with
Yeah.
Kyle, it's like, okay, you have perfect daughters and a perfect, wonderful husband and a perfect house. Like, I'm
Yeah, that's it.
interested.
Yeah. Yeah. And even like Erica Jane, this series, I feel like she's kind of realized that if she opens up a little bit more, she'd be received better. Because I actually feel like she's been more upfront this series than last.
Yeah, I think she felt the temperature.
Yeah.
Room from that series.
Yeah, she's a much more switched on than the rest of them, I think.
Absolutely. So if you want to follow my darling Faith, keeping me sane over the course of this, you can find her on Instagram at Faith with two H's underscore Elizabeth, because, quote from last week, some bitch stole her name. You can check out her writing work and her illustrations. Is that right?
Oh, so my illustrations aren't actually up there yet, but I am working on setting up a online shop where you can buy some of my illustrations and they will be housewives themed natch.
Oh, I love that. I'm going to be buying all of them. Faith also did our album artwork. She's so super talented. She did that in an afternoon, and I think it makes me look fantastic. So I'm very grateful. It's an improvement on the picture I actually sent you as well. So you can check out her writing work, and eventually we'll let you know when the shop is online at www.faithrichardson.co.uk. You can follow me on Instagram at Lou G Rogers, which everyone thinks is Lou Grodgers. Like my surname is Grodgers. No, my middle name is Gertrude. Thanks to the German side of my family for that. I'm very
I did
grateful
not
that
know
it's.
that about you.
What?
I did not know that about you.
Yep, my middle name is Gertrude. I'm very glad that it is not my first name, but here we are. And you can find my written work, photographic work, whatever, all of the various things that I do at www.louisarogers.net. And we will hopefully be recording on Thursday about VPR. So we'll speak to you then.